I remember I wasn't very keen because I was in Gurgaon and I was like, who's going to drive all the way to Delhi, right? That's the thing about networking. Yeah. You just don't want to make the effort. But then I was like, there's an open bar. And I'm like, great, I'm coming. And so so we drove and we went there. And Jivraja entered that room. There were 60 people. There were two women. One was me. The other person was an event organizer. That's when I realized that, you know, one of India's largest VC firms does not even invest in women-led founders. Yeah. And I think for me, that really shook me. And of course, I cried that day because it was like it was the only breakup I've cried about in my life. But the first couple of likes were my mother and my father, and that's it. And me, of course, right?
Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj, and today I have with me a very special guest. Join me in welcoming Ragini Das, who is the co-founder of Leap.club. Thank you so much, Ragini, for joining me. Very delighted to be hosting you.
Very glad to be here, and I'm glad we're finally doing this.
Yes, I'm glad. It's taken a bit of time, but I think...
It has. I'm guilty here.
No, I think beyond that as well, though, I'm sure the wait is going to be worth it. Yeah. I'm very excited to speak to you because... You know, I've always found Leap to be one of those purpose-led brands, missions that you can look up to, admire from afar, look at the activity. My journey in the ecosystem is about 3.5-4 years old, so I've also seen much of it from scratch. I've had the pleasure of just admiring it from afar, and I'm glad that finally we can, you know, get to the bottom of how you've built Leap, a community-led and just with so much purpose, passion, energy.
A business commercially viable,
very, very strongly. But what I want to understand, and you know, this is something that we've discussed earlier as well, very briefly, but you're this army kid, right? And much of your personality is shaped because of how early days of your life were really growing up in different cities, different countries,
not countries.
Talk to us about, you know, what was that like? There's this thing about army kids, right? Like there's this personality, there's this vibe, they can just gel with everybody. Yeah. What is that like? And what was, how did that fundamentally develop you to becoming the person you are?
Yeah. So I think the background, like you said, I am a Fauji kid. I grew up across the country, right? I was born in Delhi, but I grew up in Srinagar to, say, Ganganagar, which is in Rajasthan, to Chennai, which is, of course, down south. And I think everything and all of who I am is because of that, right? And what I mean by that, and of course, don't go by the color of my dress, but I just feel like the Indian Army teaches you a lot, right? And I'm not saying I was in the Army, my father was in the Army, right? Yeah. But I think just learning more about cultures, learning more about people, knowing that everyone is equal. I've gone to schools where, of course, I've had Jawan's kids, fellow Army officers' kids, everyone, and there is absolutely no distinction. So you are one, right, as you enter. So I think that just growing up, and we didn't grow up around like cousins and, you know, dada dadi and nana nani, which is what most people do. I think for us, it was a lot of family friends, a lot of unit officers and how you're getting posted with them, sometimes without them. It was changing schools every 2 years. It was not having, you know, friends you have from KG and kindergarten, like all of those things. So I think for me, it just taught me a lot of just being accepting of change, right? I am in Hyderabad 2 years later. I am in Jalandhar 2 years later. I am in Delhi 2 years later. I'm somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think just now making that change your strength is, I think, what most people end up doing. That's what I ended up doing, right? Like, I'm shocked at the fact that I've been in Delhi since 2016. I am someone who's just like, I get bored every 2 years, so what's next, right? But I think it just resilience, a lot of being accepting of change, a lot of treating everyone like one. Who I am and how my work today is a part of, you know, my this thing is, I'm just okay meeting different people, right? I'm not a hashtag no new friends. I want to meet new people. I want to understand their stories. I want to understand where they come from. You mentioned you grew up in Calcutta, right? Like, and I know my father was in Siliguri, so I know how to strike up a conversation around that. So So yeah, I think it's just ingrained, and we always say this, right? Like, you can spot an army kid from a kilometer, and I feel like I have that thing too. And I'll always have a soft corner, right? Like for fellow army kids, and of course, everyone in the Indian Army.
Yeah, no, I think there's something about that distinct personality, right? And it just attunes you to be very adaptive and forthcoming of different cultures, different people. And I think that really strikes, because other people, you know, have to get conditioned to it otherwise, right? Yeah. They have to really open up and stuff like that. But then in army kids, it's ingrained. So I think that's lovely to understand. But then the next part of your journey is, of course, with, you know, Zomato, which you, again, very passionately speak about. It's been a crucial part of your professional journey.
Yeah.
But then one day you go ahead and decide to leave Zomato and start Leap.club, right? I mean, before we go into the Zomato story, I want to understand, how did Zomato come into the picture as well, right? Because Zomato has been, you know, one of those poster boys in the Indian startup ecosystem that really gives you belief that Indian startups will thrive. It's now a public company, it's doing really well, stuff like that. What do you think was, you know, the Zomato story for you in terms of joining, and how you've seen them grow as well? How did it shape your professional trajectory?
Yeah. So I'll get into what, of course, Zomato did, and of course, like the Indian Army shaped my life and the first couple of years of my life. I think Zomato for me shaped the last decade, right? Yeah. And continues to, in fact, even till today. Like, I picked up the book that Dipti wrote, right? Yeah. And I was reading it yesterday. I think for me, let me give you a backstory of why Zomato happened.
Sure.
I think when I was in college, Zomato was just like starting and was coming up, and people were talking about it, and startups were coming up, right? Yeah. Like, it was becoming cool to join startups, quote unquote. And I took a very unconventional path. I actually took up a job in Ludhiana at Trident, which was a manufacturing company. And, you know, and back then they were paying me 50,000 rupees a month. And I was like, oh my God, this is great, because all my friends were getting paid like 18,000, 19,000, even though they were at the EYs and KPMGs, etc. And I knew that's not the life I wanted. And I'd also like to say that I did slightly go after the money, and I was just like, yeah, it's Ludhiana, it can't be too bad, right? Like, I've grown up across, there's enough butter chicken to eat, but apparently there isn't. Yeah. And in a year, I just realized, you know, that culture, the entire way a corporate functions wasn't my calling.
Hmm.
I just didn't want to sit behind a desk. I just did not want to do that, because from the outside, I was handling Ralph Lauren, JCPenney, this, that, making enough money, right? But I also felt like there was some kida in me which was just like, I want to do more, right? Like, I want to get my hands dirty and I want to learn more. Mm-hmm. And not like I didn't learn that, but it just was not my calling, right? And I remember back then, another kida that hit me was the MBA. Right. And I was like, I have to go to Stern, I have to do this. And, you know, I knew I didn't have enough work ex because it was just a year.
Yeah.
But I was just like, let me write my GMAT. I'll go work somewhere for about 2 years, 3 years, and then go study. Because now if I don't study, then I don't know if I'll get back to studying. So I went back home. Home is Hyderabad for me. And, you know, I signed up for this Princeton review, this, that, started studying. And then my mom's RM, her relationship manager at Standard Chartered, his brother was working at Zomato, and back then they were like, you know, there's this cool company. They're in the food tech space, and, you know, I don't know what he does, but there are bean bags, there's a foosball table, it's all of that is pretty cool. And then my mom told me there's, you know, such a company, and I was like, it is Zomato, and of course I've heard of it, and, you know, let me go give it a try. And I interviewed, and like, TLDR, there was no looking back. I started my career in Hyderabad. I didn't end up writing the GMAT ever because I just absolutely fell in love with what I was doing. Yes. I moved to Bangalore very quickly, I think in the first 6-7 months. I remember
and
they told me.
This is 2016?
No, this is 2013.
Okay.
In the first 6 months, I remember it was a Thursday, Friday, they told me, can you start Bangalore on Monday?
Wow.
And I was like, sure, okay. I mean,
why not?
Right? Like, Bangalore is a great city. I haven't personally lived there. Of course, Dad had done staff college there, so I'd been there. But I had a few friends there, but I hadn't really lived there. So I was like, sure. And Sunday, I was in Bangalore. And Bangalore was 3 years for me. And I think it was great, because I think those 3 years is when I started handling a team. I started doing trainings for, you know, the company. I launched online ordering when online ordering wasn't a thing. And I remember Swiggy was just coming and,
yeah.
you know, all of that happened. And yeah, I think I grew up, if I have to say, there. And I remember, I think back then, there was an opportunity in Delhi and someone had reached out to me. And I was slightly this thing because I think the culture in Zomato Bangalore for me till date, by the way, is unmatched. I feel like the kind of culture we were able to build, I haven't seen till today. And, wow. and that is saying something, right? So I was slightly this thing, but I also knew that growth for me is not going to happen where I'm comfortable, right? It never does. Mm-hmm. And I was like, sure, let's. And I remember I had an option for Delhi and Bombay, and I ended up picking up Delhi. And so I went. And I think the first couple of months, I was doing the same thing I was doing, which is part of sales. So first 4 years of my career at Zomato was sales. And I was doing Delhi and, you know, I think South Delhi, Central Delhi, all of those things. Again, things I knew, but just a different team, different area, more learnings, all of those things. And then this opportunity for Zomato Gold, which back then was called Deals, actually, came up. And I remember Pankaj, who was the co-founder, you know, I think back then, and two more people were working on it. And they were like, you know, there's this opportunity. And I was like, why not? I've never launched a product. And so that's when I made the move. And that's when I, you know, moved to the Gurgaon office from the Delhi office. And I think for the first couple of months, Jivraj, the product just did not launch. So we ended up onboarding restaurant partners, which was easier for me because, you know, I'd done that across most of the cities in India. But we onboarded a bunch of partners. We told them this is what it is. And the product would just not launch. And I remember in between, I had put in my papers also, which Dipi was just like, just shut up and just go back. You are not going anywhere. The product will launch. I am getting a leader. It'll happen. And it did. November, we launched. And I think day one, we hit 10,000 memberships and we had to shut. And that's how we created the FOMO saying, oh, now there's a waitlist. And that's how the waitlist Kida came into my life. And I think a couple of months later is when Anand had come. And Anand, who is now my co-founder, of course, was in Zomato from 2011 to, I think, 2013. When he quit is when I joined. So we never overlapped work-wise. Okay. But he was the 25th team member at Zomato, in fact. And he'd come and, you know, I think I was telling him that I've done enough sales here also. Now I want to do more. And that's when I moved to user growth and retention and international launches. And I think the next 2 years for me changed my trajectory, changed my growth, changed my interest, really made me realize what I'm actually passionate about. Sales is something I can sleep and do. But I don't think it was challenging me enough, you know, after the first 4 years. And that's when, I started getting into engagement, retention, so on and so forth. And I think launched Southeast Asia, Turkey, New Zealand, Australia. I was telling you, right, like 6 a.m. To 10 p.m. That's what my schedule looked like. And and of course, like outside of work, Anand and I were also friends. And we used to talk about professional networking being broken. And, you know, I keep saying he's like a founder at heart, right? So for him, it's always like, what's next for me? And this was, in fact, he told me that, you know, do you think there's something we can do? And I was just like, I love Zomato so much. I can help you. You're a great boss. But I don't know if I'm going to, you know, leave my job. Because I was at my peak, Jivraj, right? I knew I was growing. I knew I was getting recognized. And at that point, that's what I wanted, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I remember, I think he'd put a couple of ideas on a deck and he said, you know, why don't you take a look? Why don't you sleep over it? And I did. And I was like, I added my pointers and we were like, okay, let's send it to some friendly investors. And, you know, we sent it to Rohit and a bunch of these people who Anand had raised from in the past for his last venture, which was Press Play. And, you know, everyone was like, this is great. Amazing.
Yeah.
Who are you building for? And I think back then we didn't know the answer. We were like, it's a professional network. And that time we were also thinking concierge service, this, that. So it was a very different, you know, idea altogether. And I think one of the VCs had told us that, why don't you come? There's a portfolio, this thing that we're doing, and just come to JW Marriott and meet fellow founders and, you know, meet us and so on and so forth. And I remember I wasn't very keen because I was in Gurgaon and I was like, who's going to drive all the way to Delhi, right? That's the thing about networking. Yeah. You just don't want to make the effort. But then I was like, there's an open bar. And I'm like, great, I'm coming. And so so we drove and we went there. And Jivraj, I entered that room. There were 60 people. There were two women. One was me. The other person was an event organizer. That's when I realized that, you know, one of India's largest VC firms does not even invest in women-led founders. Yeah. And I think for me, that really shook me. And of course, you know, by then, while we'd put all the ideas on deck, we also started speaking to a lot of people about, you know, what do they do for their professional growth? What is it that they want? And so we spoke to a bunch of people who are not people we knew, because that's when the bias comes from. I used to go to this restaurant called Grammar Room, and Vishwani, who think you've spoken to in the past, right? And she used to, of course, handle Grammar Room. And like, I even spoke to her, because I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know you, but please tell me, right? And we eventually ended up speaking to almost 300 odd people. And that's when I realized the way women were speaking about just the lack of everything was so obvious. Yeah. Something had to be done about it. And that night, by the way, I put my resignation. And I had to send it to Anandoli. But so I served my notice. I finished 6 years at Zomato. On my birthday is when I quit. I cried that day because it was like it was the only breakup I've cried about in my life. But the next day, which was the 8th of December, is when, you know, I started cold writing to Suchita, Ankur Variku, all of these people, and I was like, you know, this is who I am, first of all. Yeah. This is what I'm trying to build. Can you just give me 30 minutes, right? I'd love to just speak and just hear me out. And, you know, I think most people were kind enough to give us time. And that's what I did. All of December, I went from trying to be the food tech baby to what is this startup, right? Yeah. And Anand moved out in Jan. So I think Jan is when we completely started work on Leap. And of course, multiple pivots happened because we'd also thought of Leap in the pre-COVID world.
Right.
So,
right.
So yeah, that is the...
Yeah, super exciting. Yeah. Life takes a full circle eventually.
Truly.
But no, that's incredible, right? We don't really understand what the impact of these early journeys at startups can be, right? Especially when you join companies like Zomato pretty early on, relatively. Yeah. And your journey is a testament to, you know, it taking you places. So
mine
lovely.
And many others.
Yeah,
right? I think
exactly.
Zomato was a...
We've now seen so many, right?
So
like
many.
The Flipkart mafia, all of that we talk about and things like that. But very exciting. One thing that I took back is, you know, you keep mentioning why not instead of, like, you know, thinking that, okay, this is what I'll restrict myself to. That's a great attitude to have and something that is worth echoing. And also challenging yourself, right? You can't wait for you to be challenged externally. You have to continuously internally drive those challenges. So that's really interesting. But coming to Leap now, right? I think the interesting fact is everybody somehow realizes that this is a problem, right? Yeah. I don't think anybody does not, if not actively, maybe passively realizes that, you know, there are not enough women in most rooms, especially when it comes to investors, startup founders, and then women leaders as well, right? Because in a group of leaders also, you'll see very less women representation. But you decided to do something about it. Others don't usually, right?
Yeah.
There's also this rationalization of how large of a business can this get, okay?
Market size,
yes.
Of course.
And VCs, you know, love to ask these questions and want to understand how do you build like a new professional network in today's world, right? Because those standard questions of, okay, you know, how is this the platform, etc., come about. Talk to us about what were the concerns when you were starting, right? And also, since, you know, you thought, did you think of sitting on it for a while? How deep was your market research? What was the pre-starting journey, the December, Jan, if you can go into more detail and then help us understand what the thesis was. I think that'll be very interesting, because how to build a viable business of this problem vis-a-vis, you know, thinking of this as a project must have been like a crucial decision.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So I hate the word project, you know, as much as I'm a project manager myself, I feel like for me, whenever, and not just my business, anyone's business gets typecasted into hobby, project, like, and, you know, we have
face this with the podcast.
Absolutely, right? Which is why I asked you, what's the end goal, right? Because nobody is ever doing it as a project or a side project or a hobby, right? I think, have we faced that? Have we heard, like, I've heard things like, why are you building for the two-tier population of India, right? And I feel like, Jivraj, I have grown so much of all the other learnings that I've had. I think my real growth is just like controlling myself and controlling what I feel about what people have to say. But I think in Jan, when we started, of course, and we said, you know, I think we knew that this is going to make our life tougher.
Okay.
I mean, we've built startups, we've worked at startups. We know this is not the quote-unquote VC viable business. We know there is no playbook. We know we will have to pivot 100 times. But I think one thing that we also knew was we have to do something about it, right? It was, when we decided that we'll build for women, of course, it was a great go-to-market strategy also, because, you know, if you wake up and say, yeah, I want to build a network, then of course people are going to say, yeah, there's a LinkedIn, there's a this thing, you run into chicken and egg, correct, how many people are there, so on and so forth, right? But we also knew this was a real problem that needed solving. And, you know, as Kunal Shah keeps saying, right, like, don't build a product and then be like, this is what I'm going to solve for. Find a real problem and then kind of build products around it. And I feel like we've kind of done the latter.
Yeah.
Have we got it spot on? Who knows, right?
Yeah.
There is 100 things to do. There's 100 more things we need to change, so on and so forth. But we also knew, I think, this is something we can give the next decade of our life to, right? And I think that is very important.
Right.
You're not doing it with the intention of FOMO. You're not doing it with the intention of meko ye business bechna hai, or you're not doing it with the wrong this thing. We also, you know, and by the way, there, by now, there are people doing work in the space, which wasn't the case 3.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And people keep talking to me about, oh, there's competition, this, that. And I'm like, Leap needs 100 leaps for people to start looking at this as a viable business.
Right.
Right. So I think for us, the journey, now, if I have to really go back to it, 3rd of Jan, we took up a co-working space in Supermart, which was in phase 4. Right, like literally 2 seats, because we had 5,000 rupees as our budget, and we've gone from one Horizon Center to Supermart, and that was the first month. And, you know, I think we started making like some creatives on Canva, we started putting them out, and, you know, friends and family were very kind to share, support. And, you know, I'm someone who's super shameless. I'm like, I'm going to send you the link on WhatsApp, I'm going to ask you to share it on Instagram, I'm going to do it on Twitter, I'm going to do it on LinkedIn, because when you're starting, You have to be shameless.
Yeah.
You have to be shameless, right? You can't be like, what will this person think? The first couple of likes were my mother and my father, and that's it. And me and Anand, of course, right? But however, I think because of all of this push, by end of Jan, we had a basic GoDaddy website, right? We had a wait list, of course, borrowed the concept of Zomato Gold, and Jivraj, we had 1,000 people on that wait list, and we did nothing. All we did was put out facts and that something needs to be done, and we're building it, right? By Feb is when I started reaching out to these women. I started with Delhi, because we started Leap as a very offline first business, and we said, we'll do Delhi, we'll do Bombay, we'll do Bangalore, and that's our plan. And I started reaching out to people. I remember I'd personally met almost 60, 65 people, trying to convince them to give me 30,000 rupees, because, you know, while we started reaching out to angels, and that was our strategy, and I'll talk a little bit about why and who we got on board, but we started reaching out to angels, but we really, beyond the capital that we'd basically put, we had no money in the bank.
Right.
So we also needed money to sustain the features that we were giving, right?
Correct.
And for context, we had group coaching, we had therapy, and all of this costs us money.
Correct.
Right, because we were going, we need a supply for us to get the demand. Because
absolutely,
again, like the first question is, who else is in the network?
Yeah,
you can't say, there are 3 people in the network. So we had a 30,000 rupee, fee, which will give you access to benefits worth even more. And that was the negotiation we had done with, you know, of course, the coaches, therapists, all of that. And that's how we started. So we met 60, 65 people. I remember going to Nino mostly, because that's where, you know, I think most people agree to meet. And I remember Anand used to keep telling me that you will pay for the coffee if you don't end up closing. And and I still remember 510 was the 2 teas and 2 coffees or whatever, right? And 30 people ended up paying me 30,000 rupees. And, you know, I for me, they're my heroes till today, right? Because I was not Ankur Variku, or I was not a Kunal Shah, where you know you can raise money just
instantly,
like that, like instantly without any of this thing. So the fact that they believed in us, they believed in what we were building, the fact that, you know, and some of them took time, because 30,000 rupees for an Indian woman is not small money, right? No matter what she is earning.
Correct.
I think all of Feb pretty much was that. And we had also started then reaching out to, you know, I think Angels who have been founders in the past.
Right.
That was our criteria. Till today, in fact, as much as possible, we try to be picky about people who understand our journey, who understand Leap is not a hockey stick growth business, who understand we need to build a certain way, who understand why paid is important to us, right? So who trust us for sure, but also truly believe in it as a business as well as mission. So we'd reach out to, you know, I think ex-founders, this, that, and we'd started getting some commits. And of course, that money hit the bank, I think around June, July. And we ended up raising around 300K, which was enough for us to at least start a team, right? Like have people beyond Ragini Pitch, have people beyond Anand, build like a tech stack and stuff like that. And yeah, that's how we started. And I remember 14th of March, we were prepping for our launch, which was on the 4th of April. And COVID happened. And we were like, what is this? We'll be back in a week, right? And I was like, let's keep the work going. Yeah. And we'd book Quorum, I remember, and we'd paid them. And I'd reached out to Barkhadat and Faye D'Souza and, you know, women in the Indian cricket team. And like, F&B was sorted because, you know, that's the first thing I will sort ever.
But
and it didn't happen. Yeah. And it didn't happen. And I remember crying, thinking, kya kar diya? I should just go back to Zomato. Oh, literally, what have we done? But, you know, I think Anand said something very interesting. And he said, you know, colleges have pivoted. College has gone from offline to online.
Yeah.
We can do two things. We can think this was a waste. We can go back to our jobs. Or we can do what the world is doing, which is fight this. Correct. And that's what we did. That's what we decided to do. Over the next 30 days, I had to go back to these 30 women and say, you know, what you paid me for is not what it is right now. And it's now online. And this is what we'll do. And this is what we won't do. And this is what we'll additionally do. These are completely pivoted. Right, and God bless them. Nobody asked for a refund, and they were like, let's just do it. Right, tell us when we're starting. Mm. And we launched, I remember the 1st of May, and 25th of April, I had like this induction sort of a thing, you know, like taking it from colleges.
Yeah.
But I got like 30 of them in a room, 15 and 15. And I remember one of them cried, and she was a strategy lead at Google, right? And Radhika, she said, Ragini, I don't know when was the last time I saw 13 women in a Zoom call just cheering for me.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that was my Glassdoor moment.
Yeah.
And I just knew that, you know, I'm going to have shitty days. And I trust me, I do. But that moment is what I go back to, which is just Leap is needed in the world, right?
Yeah.
And I think over the last 3.5 years, we have been proved time and again, right? Like people have gotten jobs, they've gotten out of bad marriages, they've got podcast buddies. Our biggest revelation was Leap.club is the Bumble BFF of India. People are making friends. My closest friends, Jivraj in Gurgaon, are people I met via Leap, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like all of those successes and all of those learnings only came because we built for women. Were there days we were heartbroken and shattered and we were like, you know, you see people raising $10 million, you have people tell you that, you know, make it free, open for men. And to just stay put to your conviction, to your gut, to your vision, it's tougher than one would think. And there are a few things money can't buy, and this is one of those things.
No, that's so, I can only imagine the gratification because of, you know, what you do and the change in people's lives that Leap is really bringing, because, you know, in a world without Leap, you know, things would be as they were.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, not at all a pleasant sight. And there is so much good happening because of Leap. And that's why I think sometimes these things matter, because, you know, the easier choice of, you know, raising more money on a different idea could have been something else. But no, kudos to you, Anand, and the entire team for staying true to the North Star and just continuing to do this. It's just incredible, right?
No, on our you mission. Mentioned, right? Like you mentioned about being VC, this thing. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
There are companies building for it. And I have nothing against these people who are going after that trajectory growth. I think the rewiring we have done, because I think until last year, we also believed that we were just on this path of proving that there is a big enough TAM, right? Till today, we believe that there are more than 1 million women globally who will pay to invest in their growth and will pay for a platform slash community like Leap. I don't think everyone sees it that way, right? But I think the rewiring we've done internally is not having to prove to anyone that this is big enough.
Correct.
Our energy needs to be focused on how do we sustain? Because yeah, even that world has completely changed for everyone, for VCs, for founders, for everyone, right? So I think for us, the fact that we went revenue first has honestly been the reason why Leap has survived till today.
Right.
Our pricing models have changed, right? Like we've gone from 30K to 6,000 to 2,000 to 3,000. But the features and the offerings have evolved so much, right? That now we feel like we're in that path where we know this is how we sustain, this is how we want to become profitable, and this is how we will create the impact that we want to create, right? So again, nothing wrong in it. It's just, it's maybe,
to each their own.
To each their own, right? Yeah. Maybe this is the path that we don't want anymore. Right? Yeah. And anymore being the keyword.
No, I mean, no right or wrong for sure, but this is the one that works for you. And, you know, there needs to be all kinds of businesses, and this is one. And as you said, right, globally, there is enough of a scalable opportunity as well here. So, yeah, I think time will tell. And we're very excited to see where it goes. But coming to the other intrinsic bit, right, I think some of the questions that come to mind when you look at Leap is how do you maintain experience at scale, right? Because as an, again, you know, outsider, it looks like some of these things are just so personalized. They include the sense of human touch. That would be very hard to replicate or to really scale across like thousands of folks as members, right? How do you standardize an experience? How do you ensure that the experience does not break for folks at scale?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think it's something that keeps us up at night, I think every day. And I think the key for any community building is, Jivraj, you have to get your users to become community builders. Right? And let me try to explain that in the form of an example. As Leap, I can do only so much. I have also gone from a 60 people team to now a 25-30 people team, right? So lesser hands, still want to create the same amount of impact, dent work. But, and let's just say experiences which slash events, right? Which are right now the biggest, coolest things. Leap on its own can only do maybe the bigger events in Delhi, Bombay, Bangalore, and these are monthly, right? Like we end up doing at least one or two 80 to 100 people events in these cities, which is almost 75% of my community, right? So that's where we focus. We end up doing some in Pune and Hyderabad and all of that also every second month. The bigger events, which is the thousands of people, we're doing something at JLN next month, right? Like, and I'm absolutely shitting my pants on my dress, but we are expecting 2,000 women, right? And this is the first time I think anyone is ever doing an event at this scale only for women, and we really want to do it, right? And with every, I think, Leap of Fair, we started with 200 people, but now we're doing 2,000. So with everyone, we're taking the kind of standard up, the experience up, many more people, so on and so forth. So those I can, let's just say, afford to only do from a time, energy, money, bandwidth, all of that point of view, maybe thrice a year, right? Which is what we do. We do one Delhi, one Bombay, one Bangalore. And there are, by the way, lots of people who come from Pune, Calcutta, Jaipur, Hyderabad. I remember for the last one in Bombay, we had a bus of our members from Pune who came just for that. There was someone who came from Chennai. There was someone who came from Chandigarh. She was like, you know, I missed the Delhi one and I really wanted to see what this is about. So as Leap, that's what we can do. Right. But what we can enable is get members to do a lot of this as well, right? We recently launched a feature called Circles because we just realized that, of course, online is something that we continue to do. So all of this we do, we also do online masterclasses, so on and so forth, speed networking for the remaining 25% who may be not be able to come to, you know, I think these city offline events. But we also realized that members wanted to meet offline. Someone sitting in Calcutta wants to meet another person. Sitting in Jaipur, Ahmedabad, they want to meet other people. So this, with this feature, what we've done is you can actually meet other people around you. Leap does not have to make the event happen. We're there to help, we're there to list, we're there to support. We'll do all of that. So we've in fact started doing a lot of these member-led circles, member-led events. A lot of our members do workshops on the platform. There is a member, Shruti Agarwal. She has more than 150 clients only from Leap. She is the wealth management guru, as I call her, right? And by the way, so many more Shrutis in the community, right? Where members just end up giving back because they're also getting something out of it.
Of course.
So I think it's literally enabling your community to
become champions.
Become champions. And I think just feedback, keeping your ears to the ground, right? But also very importantly, knowing what to skip. I think the mistake we end up making is, and we, I mean in general, right? Like not just Leap. Either we give too much into feedback that, oh my God, user saying this, oh my God, user saying that, or we end up not giving
anything at all.
Anything at all, right? And I think there's a fine line between really caring to this is skippable, at least at this point, and communicating that. I think the mistake a lot of people make is not keep their eyes, ears, and also mouth to the ground. Like, you have to tell people. For example, if, you know, less than 2-3% of my users are using a feature and I am deciding to, like, just not work on it anymore, I can't just pull out. I have to tell them the why. There will be 10 people who will come back upset, angry, this, and I have to talk to them, right? And I think that's how we try to at least keep the engagement slash love slash, you know, experience at scale. I'm not saying we do everything right. I feel like there are 100 things, and I always feel like there are 100 things we have to do more. But I think you just have to go back to first principles. So I think for us, the focus is a lot on NPS, a lot on engagement, a lot on getting to 100K members. You know, I think we decided this figure before our Big Bang campaign, and we were like, you know, we want to get to 100K in 6 months.
One-fourth there.
We're one-fourth there, but I think we learned, Jivraj, that we, you know, whenever you put a timeline, you say, I have to do it in this. That's what leads to disruptions and disappointments. So today our goal is we want to get to 100K. And I'm not saying now it has to happen in 3 years. But we will do everything in our capacity to get there faster. But there are, in a business like us, there are no shortcuts, right? I don't have a playbook. You know, there are, and of course, like I've done Zomato, I've done a bunch of other products. So for me, DAO and MAO are necessarily not the most
important factors.
There are users who use offline who don't use online. There are users who use online who don't use offline. So for me, there is no if this, then success, right? So I feel like we're on our own path and we're figuring what will work, what will not work. But yeah, I think for us, it's just focus on engagement, NPS, growth, and everything else will follow.
Got it. No, but super commendable, I think. Just the offline events also, right? Like if you look at them and I've only, again, observed from afar.
Of course.
It looks like this is, you know, just to pull off the execution required to pull something like that off. And then the responses by everybody, right? Like, I know that after every one of these Leap of Fair days, your stories are, like, filled with these reposts by everyone, right? Like, I think you could potentially, like, 50-100 of these count, and like everybody's just overflowing with joy, and that's just so lovely to see.
And there's no influencer marketing here.
There
is no one who enters that ground with the FOC invite, right? For us, by the way, that's our biggest growth lever. After every event, we see our memberships go up by like 25-30% consistently. So for us, in fact, the offline events are of course great member experience. But for me, that's also marketing.
No, it's commendable because, you know, especially after or during COVID, you could not imagine, like, you know, offline events happening at this scale. But to be able to pull it off is just, like, so commendable. One question that comes to mind, Ragini, is that, you know, like, with everything that keeps happening, right, we see these new product releases as well, right? Like, there was this jobs portal which got launched.
It'll make me cry.
Then you're launching something for, you know, college students or school students, if I'm not wrong. So what I'm trying to understand is you have this continuous sort of, you know, short-term objectives to reach, right? Which is to say that, you know, events will happen, you have to continuously uplift experience. And then you have these other objectives of saying that, okay, we have to do launches, we have to do other product shippings, right? All of that. And then you also have to grow members and you have those metrics, right? Yeah. How do you manage all of this, right? In the sense, like, what is a, I don't want to ask and stereotype, you know, priorities, but like, how do you manage the long-term and the short-term and ensure that everything continues to stay on track and does not break?
Yeah. No, I'll be very honest. I've done such a shitty job at it the last couple of months, right? And that's what I want to lead with. Mm. And, you know, since you mentioned jobs, the last time we spoke, we were talking about jobs and I was very excited about it. Yeah. Jobs is something we've been working on since day one of Leap. And what I mean by that is we have been collecting, you know, what salary bands people are on, what are the companies they look up to.
Yeah.
We have all of this data for 25,000 top women in the country.
Right.
We spent all of the last half of last year just trying to build the jobs platform. Mm. I got someone who's built the tech stack at IIM Jobs. We got someone who's working at Naukri as the product manager to come and, you know, I think build jobs for us. Built out a whole jobs team, got all the bigger companies, you name it, right? Like the BCGs, the Nestle's, the Cokes, to the smaller startups, the Zomato's, the Swiggy's, everyone on board. Hmm. We launched in Feb. We got some very early signs. Partners started paying for it. So that was another revenue source, right? And I fully got into it because I think for me, like the minute I see a new shiny object, I'm like, let's go. But I think for us, what really disappointed us was the product didn't take off after a certain point because the market changed, right? My demand or my supply was not as excited. And what I mean by that was companies were not hiring at all, right? People were not willing to switch jobs. They were not willing to apply because they were like, I don't even know if I have my own job,
right?
And, you know, there's a thin line between pushing, and then just realizing that you can't fall into sunk cost. Mm. Just because you have spent all your life dreaming about it or, you know, the last 6 months working on it does not mean it's working. I am spending a considerable amount of money paying the team who's working on jobs. They are some of our smartest folks because we were like, you know, this is going to be the next big thing for us. We are seeing that there are other features like Circles that I spoke about, right? And it's week one. We're seeing 5,000 people use it compared to, say, a really tiny percentage in the same week, right, for jobs. And we were like, where are we investing time, energy, my effort, my energy, right? And that's when, by the way, we took the call to pause jobs and, in fact, it'll go off the platform this month. But I think that was very heartbreaking. And this was one of the many that we have, you know, I think just played around. There are some that have stuck. There are some like connections, like events. Circles is picking really well, right? Like we're monetizing it over the next couple of weeks. We're working on something called Pros. Of course, like you said, events online, offline, they'll always end up happening. But I've realized one thing about the Indian paid consumer is you have to invent. You have to keep giving them something that they want. You have to take cue from data, you have to take cue from gut, you have to take cue from all these things and stop investing your time in, you know, things that are not adding value. And by the way, same thing we saw with Campus, right? Campus for me was a personal project. It was not going to be a paid platform, so to speak. And we set ourselves a milestone, right? We said, you know, at least if 10,000 people come on the waitlist over the next couple of months is when we launch. Less than 1,000 people. After like writing to colleges, doing whatever we can, and when you're trying too hard to move certain metrics, that means the metric's not working, right? And so I think this year for me has been particularly tough because, you know, two of our biggest
projects
didn't see the light of the day or saw it and then didn't really take off as much as we'd like. But I think how we look at this is you have to let your members tell you what features they like and build on it. If people love events, double down on it. Think of what else you can do. If people love, you know, another new feature, think of how you can improve that experience. Talk to people. So I think for us, it's always about pivoting, evolving. Same thing. I think pricing was such a big, we made such a big decision to move from annual memberships to lifetime memberships. Because we just realized that LEAP is not a one-year course, right? You have to be able to come back to it when you want.
Right.
And there are going to be 2 months you're super swamped and you don't have time to, you know, go for a run with a fellow LEAP member or connect with someone on the app or get like a Zoom coffee, yeah. right? We all have those months. Like yeah. we took months to yeah. schedule this, right? Like yeah. life gets in the way and it's okay.
Yeah.
And we understand,
yeah.
right? And anyway, members are paying us additionally for events and this and that. And so our LTV will anyway happen.
Right.
And we figured that this is an amount people are willing to pay in India. It gives you the right intent. In fact, people who were paying us 6,000 rupees act the same way as people who paid us, you know, now 3,000 rupees or whatever. So who are we to really talk about things like quality and what pricing
yeah.
does? And, you know, this word keeps coming even within the community.
Right.
And I had a bunch of members and we have some WhatsApp groups, right, like with these fellow members. And then in the Bombay WhatsApp group, someone just questioned. They were like, you know, someone bought it for so much. I bought it for so much. And Jivraja was, I think I was traveling or something, was on a flight. And I woke up to the messages and I woke up to like 30 women on that group just explaining how pricings work at startups to those members who had those questions, right?
Yeah.
So to have your community really back you up,
yeah.
I think that is just the best part about building Leap.club for all of us.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. I think every time you're talking about this, it just looks like, you know, the champions of the community is the community itself.
Absolutely.
Which is so heartfelt because, you know, it's a great loop to have and just shows the impact that the community is making to its members. So
yeah.
I think that's
and
lovely.
And we can't make everyone happy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
knowing that.
And
right?
that's part
yeah.
of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, so yes, you can make the 90% happy, but there'll
yeah.
be some folks who will always not have the best experience, which is fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's very exciting is also, I think I've also read about, you know, how you are very careful with your team, right? There is this certain sense of joy and like, you know, almost motherly feel for your team, for the culture that you're trying to curate, because this is, again, this is not like any other company, right? This is very different. This requires a different DNA. What I'd love to understand is if you can shed light on how to, you know, bring this purpose and percolate that amongst everybody. Because, again, I feel that this is one of the things, like, you know, you understand the problem, you feel for it.
Yeah.
But to feel for it enough to build something in it
to
is
it
a difference, right?
Yeah.
That's a difference that you have to really bridge. How do you get that done and how does that take place?
Yeah. No, that's a good one, and that's also the toughest part of my job, right? Like,
yeah.
I've spoken about 100 hurdles. I
yeah.
still feel the one thing that will always keep me up at night is, like, how do we create and, you know, nurture talent within
yeah.
the community/company to be able to feel and act like founders, right?
Right?
Founder's mindset is very easy to say, way tougher to really percolate to the team. For me, the first question I ask someone when they apply to Leap is, don't tell me the mission. I know the mission's great. Tell me why else you want to join Leap.club, right? And for me, that is the biggest filter, how they talk about the mission.
Yeah.
We are not, you know, and, you know, it's funny. Sometimes my team members go for these events and, you know, they're organizing it, etc. And even some members would ask, like, so what do you do full time? And I'm just like, what do they mean, right? But this is a full-time job. We function as a very hardcore startup. I am the toughest to please founder there is. I know it. I just know it, right? It's who I am. It's how Leap functions. The DNA that you said is very important. So beyond the mission,
yeah.
do you agree that a startup will require a certain type of pace? It
yeah.
will have a certain level of craziness. It will need you to be able to take risks. It will need you to not get married to your ideas because they're your ideas, right? And I think ownership and resilience and all of that is, of course, they're words and they're important. We check for those. But I feel like what beyond the mission?
Yeah.
Mission is important.
Yeah.
But only mission doesn't cut it, right?
Correct.
You have to know that this is going to be a very tough journey. You have to be willing to give it. And I'm not saying 10 years.
Yeah.
Right, because I understand people come, people go, they do their part and they move on, right?
Yeah.
So whatever it is that you look at it and we have an honest conversation about it. What are you willing to drive without making it look like a 9-to-5? And you know, I have a very controversial opinion on this, but work-life balance is a question I always ask. Some people may not agree, but when you're joining a startup, your life rebalances. And I'm not saying like we're working at 12 a.m. and this and that, but there are going to be Saturdays you're going to have to work. If I need to get to the venue at, you know, 6 a.m. because I have the event starting at 12, I'm talking about Leap of Air, not all events, I have to do it, right?
Yeah.
We don't believe in I will log into Slack at 10 a.m. and like not be available after 6 p.m. And I've learned, the more I've tried to not say anything, just, you know, we're becoming bigger, there's that, it comes out later, yeah. Right? So your DNA has to really match. You have to know what it takes to build a startup. And, you know, Zomato was a great example where I learned that. Not everyone loves their journey at Zomato.
Yeah.
Not everyone does. There are people like me. There are people like other people who maybe do not enjoy that. And by the way, right. There is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There are companies where you can do a 9-to-5 or you can do a 9-to-6 also for that matter, right? But yeah. I think for us, there are a few things that are very, very important. And it takes a lot of grit, resilience, hard work, tears, all of this to build one. So I think for me, I am extra, extra careful. While hiring, and you know, I think I'm not even getting into, oh, this is a beer test, this, that. You don't have to be everyone's friend, but you have to think and act like a founder. You have to treat Leap like it's your own. And I think The only people who grow in any company are people who treat the company like their own. And I would like to say they're the only people who survive Leap also.
Yeah. And that's powerful. I think that really goes to show that, you know, you have to know what you really want.
Yeah.
And as a company, again, there's no right or wrong. This is what works for Leap.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, you come into the picture and this is how you've established it. So kudos to you. And this sounds like, you know, a place where you really have to be mission oriented, but you have to prove the
it's tough.
The mission.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
what numbers. Is it beyond the mission? Like, what do you look for?
Everything that I said, right? Just the hunger.
Yeah.
If I have to really say, what is that one thing? I think for me, the biggest green flag is someone who is extremely hungry for the role. You know, we have this analysis and we've learned it. We've changed, we've rewired ourselves. There are two types of people. There are people you will want because great pedigree, great experience, great of this, course. All of that. There are people who really want to work at Leap. Right? And I think in a lot of cases, sometimes we've gone after this.
Okay.
This is what you
The latter works?
The latter works. Because they value what the job means to them, what it brings to them. Someone who doesn't value and is doing it as a job, quote unquote, usually is always ends up being the wrong decision or the wrong hire or the wrong person you're interviewing. Because the hunger is very important.
Hunger summarizes it well. And I love how you've been honest about, I think, the work-life bit, right? I think, I don't think it gets mentioned, but every startup founder or operator realizes that it's going to be a grind.
Yeah.
It's just not the good thing to say, which is why it doesn't get popularized as much.
Yeah.
But I'm glad founders like you can, you know, claim it and just own it, that this is how it is.
Yeah.
And this is the reality and this is how it works. So yeah, lovely, lovely. Maybe just very quickly taking a, you know, let's zoom out a bit. Community has become this buzzword, right?
Yeah.
Every company wants to now build a community,
Absolutely.
Right? Like you're a product company, you're a consumer brand, you're any company and you want to build this community. What do you think about that just broadly, right? And considering that you've now built a community first business, what are your, like, maybe, you know, just very succinct learnings on building a strong or rather foundationally strong community? How do you build one?
Yeah. So I think you're right, right? I think when I look at a Deserve or a Nicobar, like across the board, everyone has products. And they go after, how do we build a community? How do we get this going? How do we get those repeat customers? I think for us, Jivraj, actually, community is not something we started Leap by trying to build. We started with, of course, a network. Right. We started with, okay, these are, you know, I think features and this and that. But for us, there was one common mission that just bound everyone. And that was our mission statement, which is more women in leadership positions.
Right.
So you have to genuinely feel that it is the need of the hour. And by the way, not all women think that a women-only community is going to help them. Right. So it's not as much of a blanket statement as one would actually assume, as I also discovered over calls, right? So I think for us, we did start with certain features. We realized over the first 5-6 months of the business that, you know, this is when people are not joining for the features. This is when they're joining for the other people who are in the community, right? Who are in the network back then, as we used to call it. And very quickly, we pivoted our product. We stopped saying, okay, these are benefits. We started saying, come join the community. And all of this is what you can do, right?
Got it.
So we actually became a community only in end of 2020. And today, I would like to think, touch wood, we're one of the most powerful communities because
Absolutely.
We're bound
Without
by,
a doubt.
We are bound by such a solid mission, right? The one thing that gets everyone together is the mission. So I feel like for anyone who's building communities or wants to build communities, your community can't be all four of us in a room.
Yeah.
We have to have something in common that we go after, that we gun after. The second thing is what I mentioned briefly, right? You have to empower your community to become community builders.
Yeah.
These are not hacks and secrets that you have to keep to yourself.
Correct.
I know how to, you know, run a great event. I'm going to tell you how to run it. Run it for me, right? And that is, I think, another big thing that's at the core of community building, that you have to empower your users to become your torchbearers, your advocators, your, you know, I think, community builders. Gut is very, very important. You'll have like 100, you know, 10,000 people have opinions on how we should run Deep Dot Club. I'm sure you do too, right? But I think just go after your thesis, your gut, your vision, know when to pivot, right? Because I think I always say that is the most important word of my life in the last 2 years. Just pivot, like literally like the Friends episode. But I feel like all of that at the heart of authenticity, hustle, and just real heart. You cannot fake community building.
Right.
You have to be authentic. You have to be honest. You have to own up when you fuck up. You have to tell them as it is. You have to tell them when it's not making sense, right? If you're going to tell me that, you know, we should have a web version, yeah, when I spent 6 months building it, less than 10% were using it, does not make business sense. And this is why it doesn't, versus just ignoring the message.
Right.
And that ownership, authenticity, hustle, heart is, for me, at the very core of community building. They have to feel like you're a human at the end of the day and you're there with them on ground. I cannot sit in my office and be giving gyan about community building. I have to go for that event in Delhi.
Yeah.
Right? I have to ensure that I'm going and meeting members. I have to ensure I'm using my own app.
Yeah.
So I think all of these, for me, were my biggest learnings. And the biggest one, and you know, I'm going to quote Brian Chesky because that's why we kind of borrowed it, was just invest in individual conversations as much as you can, right? We have spoken to the first 10,000 paid members for the first 2 years, right? It could have, we could have gone free, we could have gone, you know, no speaking to anyone, just come. But we also knew the first 10,000 will literally so what Leap Dot Club stands for, right? And as much as we could do it, we did it. Till today, of course, now you can, you know, buy the membership online, so on and so forth. But even till today, speaking to users, having an engagement team who's doing that, ensuring they feel like they're being responded to, this, so on and so forth, I think is very, very important at the core of community building. Sometimes we just get impatient saying, how much, right? And it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Community building is the most exhausting job today in India, and I've not even done so many jobs and I can tell you that, right? Like, it takes all of you. It takes all of you.
Yeah.
So I think those for me would be my at least the broader learnings
on
communities.
No, they really help. I think they summarize all, I think. So lovely to hear that. As we, you know, perhaps bring this to a close, and maybe we should have started here as well. There were a couple of things that you mentioned through the conversation, things like, okay, counterintuitive learnings, right? So this is what you thought would be the case, but this is what ended up being the case.
Yeah.
Can you summarize some of them for us? Because I think that seems very interesting.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned some in passing, but I thought it'll be a good time to maybe just revisit.
Yeah. So one was the hiring thing, right? Like, who do you usually go after versus...
Correct.
Who would really want the job, value the job, so on and so forth. I think for me, another interesting learning was with L&D. Learning and development, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, and coaching and a bunch of these things that we've done and we continue to do in different shapes and form today. But I feel like coaching and investing in all of these courses and this was just such a 2020 phenomena.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was something we just held on to so tight because it was our thesis. It was a big thesis that our lead investor was also chasing, right? And we were like, Let's just keep it. Chal raha hai, right? Like, I'm not investing so much time. It's okay. It can go on the side. And I think that my biggest learning was there is nothing that's happening on the side.
Hmm.
You are still waking up at 6 a.m. and checking those numbers and feeling bad about it. And you are spending 2-3 hours on it.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like cutting things sooner for me would be what I should have done a lot more. Another counterintuitive learning was, you know, like, and by the way, I'm not a motherly style of leader at all, but I do feel for the team a lot. I feel like I also hold them accountable a lot.
Right.
But if anyone's having a bad day, I'm having a bad day. It's one of those things. And I'm a crier. I'm just zero this thing.
Feeling-wise, not leader-wise.
But I feel like sometimes in the process, I have killed myself to show up.
Hmm.
You know, I think a massive learning for me and for all founders, don't kill yourself in the process. The worst thing, you know, we all hear, right? It's not a sprint, it's a marathon, so on and so forth. But the more you just keep at it, when you don't have fuel in the tank, your team will anyway lose motivation because they will see you lose motivation, right?
Right.
I've for the longest time thought of myself as an employee saying, I can't take this leave. I can't do this. I can't do this. You know, I have to show up 2 hours before. I have to do this. I have to be there when they're there. And I've realized I've not thought about myself in the process. And the truth is everyone's going to watch out for themselves. So I think for founders, it's high time they start prioritizing themselves and, you know, I think take the breaks when you need the breaks because the company is not running once your fuel's out.
Correct.
So I think that has been
one
of those gift of hindsights for me as well this year.
Yeah.
And just feature-wise, right? Like just don't get married. Just do not get married to, especially if they're your ideas.
Hmm.
Most definitely if they're your ideas. my last one was just growth takes time. Hacks can happen, levers can happen, you can do that thing and maybe do it, right? Like we recently did a Zenith One campaign and that did really well. I don't know if you saw it, right?
So
we got her to do a rap and this and that. And I think I was expecting that, oh my God, memberships will go skyrocket. They did, right? Like, of course they went up, but it doesn't happen overnight, right? Like over one day, I'm not going to have 10,000 odd members. It's
correct.
It helps with the brand. It helps with growth. It makes members happy. It makes non-members understand that there's something called Leap.club. But these are part of the journey. This is not the one hack. Just no shortcuts, no hacks are things I've learned this year.
That's awesome. I think it's just like a lot of authenticity on your end. And I love that because I think it just... difficult sometimes to put your vulnerable self out there. And I can see you in your, you know, rare, like most authentic form in here and just talking about all the things that you most often don't hear as much. So I'm glad you're mentioning all of this.
And it's important.
There's no other way, right?
Yeah.
I think because otherwise you're misleading almost.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. I think, I mean, not to say founders don't, but I think it just becomes this borderline risk of being too vulnerable and, you know, just exposing myself to the world vis-a-vis, okay, being okay with what's happening and putting only the bright side out.
Yeah, so LinkedIn is not what is really happening in real life.
Yeah. No, I think what you write and the, you know, how you put yourself out on social media is also so organic, so raw. And I think that just paves the way for so many other founders, so many other members in the community itself, right? I think that's also just wonderful. So I think it just, you know, manifests the new age founder, right? Because you have to be out there. You have to be the face. You have to be the sound of the brand. And that just really shows. This has been a lot of fun, Ragini. I have a last couple of questions, but these are more like, you know, succinct, direct, and I think we can, you know, do with quicker answers so that we save time.
I will skip my stories.
No, I think the stories are lovely, but I think we want to be mindful of time as well. But considering that, you know, you've had the benefit of just observing so many folks in the membership, right? The 25,000 folks. What are some very distinct things that you have realized about women leaders that really get highlighted?
Yeah. I'm not going to say empathy.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I feel like that is, it's just a box you're putting women on. But I feel like for me, and whether it's because of overthinking or whatever, they just think 2-3 steps ahead. It's just so important, right? Like thinking 2-3 steps ahead. And we've worked with women like Indra Noi, like Zeenat Aman, and the fact that they'll come on set or they'll come to the Zoom call 10 minutes prior is not something that I've seen with the most successful men also, right? And I feel like just that sheer professionalism is something I admire a lot about women, and it's why I enjoy working with women a lot more as well.
Awesome. Yeah. That's lovely. This is a light one, but in a world where Leap would not exist, what would you have co-founded?
A restaurant.
Oh, lovely.
A restaurant.
I think you mentioned this also on social media.
Yeah, I say this out loud. I think, and of course, like Zomato has some part to play with it, etc. But I'm very passionate about food. I'm very passionate about the way Hungering runs their restaurants. And I think for me, good food is something it's something that'll happen. I don't know the timelines, but I know it's something that I'll end up doing for sure. Yeah, running a restaurant.
Lovely. Which is that one favorite story from the Leap community that stands out for you?
I have a whole website. It's called love.leap.club.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes.
You know, I think we have thousands of
stories.
Yeah. It's really tough to pick one, but I'll just tell you the recent one that I spoke about. And it's not so much about what happened with members, because that we see every day. You know, I was at a breakfast yesterday and someone told me I met my co-founder via a speed networking event that you all did, right? So it was
lovely.
So while I hear all of that, I think for me, I was going through my own, you know, like motivating, demotivating, that whole phase, I think the last couple of days. And I told you about the Bombay WhatsApp group example, right? And there were paragraphs of women who are literally in the middle of a work day talking about why Leap is on the right path, why they support me, why they think Leap has affected their lives. And for me, I'm not even kidding, like that was my fuel, that was my recharge, that was my next 5 years, I'm at it, right? Yeah. So I feel like sometimes those stories, as much as I love the member stories, I think for me, I really needed it. And I really need to read it, hear it, whatever. And for me, that has been my at least recent favorite story, personally.
Awesome, awesome. Love that. I think that, again, I can only imagine the gratification that it would bring to be on the receiving end of something like this.
And it's not easy because, you know, I think if you're charging members money, then they're also expecting a lot, right? So it also comes with its own share of, I'm disappointed, I'm not getting this and that. And we deal with every single one individually. So yeah.
Well, that's lovely. To really understand, you know, like what drives you, you know, I don't want to, again, be generic, but then success, right, is this complicated thing that a lot of us struggle to define.
Yeah.
If you had to define your understanding of success, what would that be?
Yeah. Impact.
Okay.
Yeah. And by that, I don't mean how one views social impact or whatever. For me, I want to be known for the kind of work I've done and how I've changed people's lives. Like for me, the Leap Affair is the best thing I walk into, because I walk into stories of how people's lives have changed, like literally changed. Someone said I was an introvert, I have 10 friends now. You know, I think like I have this one person who's like made me meet my boyfriend, made me meet this. I went to a new city, had nobody, I got this. I have a podcast buddy, I have this. So for me, it's literally that, like just impact by changing people's lives. That's success for me. Money is important, but money is not my only driver in life.
Lovely, lovely. I'm so glad you mentioned that. For the last question, and you know, I often frame this as, this is not about regrets at all, sure, but considering that we have the benefit of hindsight now, if you could, you know, go back to the, you know, January of 2020 and tell yourself all the amazing things that you've learned in the last 3.5 years to, you know, restart Leap with all of this hindsight, what are some of the most important things you tell yourself?
No one's asked me that question, actually. Don't give up. Just don't give up, right? Because I think I've had days where I'm like, I can't do this. I just cannot do this. Like, what is this? Why is this happening to me, right? And I'm 31, right? And I'm just like, did I imagine my life like this at 31? And you know, I think with founders, you know, you're not making money. You're not doing things you want to do. I'm not traveling as much as I'd like to. I'm not seeing my parents as much as, you know, I'd like to. And they come to see me more often now. But I feel like just for days that I feel like giving up, I just tell myself, don't give up, because this is, you're changing lives. You're going to change lives if I'm in 2020. Yeah.
That's lovely. I'm so glad. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Ragini.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed this so much.
I hope the wait was worth it.
Yes, it was very, very worth it and more, because, you know, I had a certain line of thought as to how this would go, but this has been so much more. We've covered so many tangents.
Yeah,
and
like it's
this last bit was so
interesting. Literally my last 5 years, all, you know,
Lovely. No, this has been great. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.